नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
वी रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 18 एंटाइटल डिस्क्रिप्शन ऑफ वर्णाश्रम धर्म टेक्स्ट नंबर 34। आहार अर्थम समीहेत युक्तम तत् प्राण धारणम तत्वम मिमरिष्यते तेन तत् विज्ञाय विमुच्यते। आहारार्थम समीहेत युक्त तत् प्राण धारणम तत्वं विमृश्यते तेन तद्विज्ञान विमुच्यते। आहारार्थं समीहेत युक्तं तत् प्राणधारणं तत्वं विमृश्यते तेन तद्विज्ञान विमुच्यते। आहारार्थं समीहेत युक्तं तत् प्राणधारणं तत्वं विमृश्यते तेन तद्विज्ञान विमुच्यते। आहारार्थं समीहेत युक्तं तत् प्राणधारणं तत्वं विमृश्यते तेन तद्विज्ञान विमुच्यते। प्राणधारणं तत्वं विमृश्यति तेन तद्विज्ञाय विमुच्यते। लेडीज, आहार टू ईट, अर्थम इन ऑर्डर, समीहेत वन शुड एंडेवर, युक्तम प्रॉपर, तत् ऑफ द पर्सन, प्राण life force, dharanam, sustaining, tatvam, spiritual truth, vimrishyeta, is contemplated, tena, by the strength of the mind, senses, and life air, tat, that truth, vignaya, understanding, vimuchate, one is liberated. Translation from the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. If required, one should endeavor to get sufficient foodstuffs, because it is always necessary and proper to maintain one's health. When the senses, mind and life air are fit, one can contemplate spiritual truth. And by understanding the truth, one is liberated. Purport. A foodstuff does not come automatically or by token begging, then one should endeavor to keep body and soul together so that one's spiritual program will not be disturbed. Normally, those who are endeavoring in spiritual life cannot maintain steady concentration on the truth if their body and mind are weakened by under eating. On the other hand, extravagant consumption of food is a great impediment for spiritual advancement and should be given up. The word ahararartham in this verse indicates eating only to keep oneself fit for spiritual advancement and does not justify unnecessary collecting or warehousing of so-called alms. If one collects more than necessary for one's spiritual program, the surplus becomes a heavy weight that drags one down to material platform. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutapadakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Shahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Krishna The purpose of attending Srimad Bhagavatam class or speaking of Srimad Bhagavatam is oftentimes among various purposes which are served, one purpose definitely is reinforcement. That means we are not necessarily speaking or hearing for something new. But definitely we are looking to understand how to even better focus on that which we already know. We already know that the purpose of life is to become Krishna conscious through the process of purification. We know that because we heard it, we meditated upon it, we considered it for many, many times in our life. However, the purpose by which we read or hear or speak is because we want to reinforce what we have already sort of understood and create deeper and deeper and deeper impressions on our consciousness. It's like if you hit something in the same place for a long time, it will create a dent, even if it is stone. Right? So, we have stone-like consciousness. We are hard-hearted people. We have lost. It is said Krishna is makhan chor. Why is he like makhan? Because probably in this world, the softest thing in the world is makhan. When a person churns butter fresh, in fact, Krishna is the supreme of everything in every aspect. So Krishna's own body is compared to makhan. One of the names of Krishna is Makhan Lal. We have a Prabhupada disciple called Makhan Lal. He had come to the hospital some time back. Huh? Oh, Makhan Lal. So it is said it is Krishna's body of course, Yashoda Mai lifts him, Krishna, Nanda Maharaj lifts him, the Gopas, Gopis lift him. But his body is so soft, you probably feel that you will hurt him, you know, with your harsh hands. That's why we want to avoid pins as much as possible when we dress the deities. Because, you know, we know the feel the deity as, you know, not as butter or soft, but we know that the body is transcendental and therefore it can get hurt very easily. So, the softest thing is butter. When you make freshly churned butter, you can just put your finger inside and it will go right inside. Right? So we are not talking about Amul butter, that's hard. That's kept in the fridge for hours together, years together, and it is like stone practically again. You can hit it on somebody's head and it will crack. But you put butter on somebody's body, he will enjoy it probably. That's what the Brihvas used to do, just throw butter on each other, right? The softest thing is butter. So Krishna will only steal our heart. Krishna is supposed to be Manohara or Chittahara. We read this Chittahari Bamsidhari. Right? Chittahari. He steals. Hari har lete. He steals. But when will he steal our heart? Not because when, you know, how, why would he steal a stone like heart? It doesn't give him pleasure. But when he finds the heart is soft, like butter. Navanita Tashkara. Right? Then he will steal it. So, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, we are hoping that the heart becomes gradually softened by the grace of Krishna. So what we're hearing today, reading today, is nothing new. It's about the process about aligning the body, aligning the senses, aligning the mind, and making it fit. The word used is fit. It's a buzzword today, right? Fitness. Right? Buzzword. Anyone is into fitness, right? Fitness, 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 people start thinking of big muscles. Big muscles, strong hamstrings, strong triceps, a flexible body which can go, you know, like any asana can be done. You know, you can, it's like rubber. You can flex it the way you want, any direction. So people think this is fitness. And Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, is a far more superior, advanced version of fitness than this only bodily fitness, which is essential, but it is very primeval. This is very basic and very foundational. So, it says, when the senses, the mind, and the life airs are fit, one can contemplate spiritual truth. How beautiful. How beautiful. We can even use this one line. Many devotees here, so many of you I'm sure are into college preaching and corporate preaching and, you know, preaching to outside world. We can even all use this verse itself from the Bhagavatam as a preamble to what we are going to talk about in that, you know, seminar or workshop or whatever is going on. We can quote, this is Krishna's own direct spoken words to Uddhavji when he says, so fitness is not just something which even with the outside world wants, but we also want fitness as practicing devotees, but we have a fitness of a different type, a different scale, a different paradigm, a different level of fitness we are looking at. We want the senses and the mind and the life airs. The life airs means all the 10 airs. The body has got 10 types of airs. 5 principal and 5 secondary airs. 5 principal are samana, vayana, udana. Right? These are all apana, vayu. These are all different types of airs which are regulating the bodily functions of contraction of the heart, and breathing of the lungs, and movement of the blood through the vessels. All this is regulated by the airs. Because as you know, air makes things move. Is it not? What does air do? Air makes things, when air moves, the leaves move, everything moves. The clouds, huge clouds move because of the air. So the blood is moving in the body. How? The heart is moving. How? because there is a subtle type of air which makes the heart move in a particular way and the blood move in a particular direction. Right? So every bodily function is controlled by the airs. So here we are being reminded that we need to control the body, mind and the life airs. Why? Because then we can feel a sense of favorable environment by which we can contemplate on the spiritual truth. Every activity requires an environment to perform. For example, we are here in the Bhagavatam class. There's too much of noise here, a lot of children playing here, football. We cannot probably talk about this. Right? We require an environment. A temple is there, and the environment is required. A library is there. It's a place to read, to contemplate, to understand. You require silence. Right? And you're going to a restaurant, you require a different environment. You go to a stadium, you require a different environment. Right? You go to a bar, you go to require a different environment. And you go to a place of worship, a different environment. Right? So depending on what activity you are designing, you require to give it a supportive type of environment so that they become more conducive, more favorable. Right? And if they are not conducive, then activity is not performed properly. So not the activity alone is not important. What is important also is to create the supportive environment. So contemplating on spiritual truth, Krishna, which is the goal of our life, always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. Right? That is Smartavya Satatam Vishnu Vismartavya. Right? Everything in this world is designed to create Vismartavya. And everything that the Acharyas teach us is to create Smartavya. The world encourages Vismartavya and the Acharyas encourage Smartavya. Right? So to always be in a state of Smartavya, contemplation on Krishna, you require environment. So here the focus today is on food. Our favorite subject. How many of you heard this one word, one line, when you go to somebody's house or in your, maybe your wife or, you know, maybe even brahmacharis, I don't know how much they talk on this line, but somebody serving you prasad, right? And you say, no, I don't want. Suppose you take, please take. No. Then what they will say? Prabhu, tomorrow is Ekadashi. You heard this line? Right? Tomorrow is Ekadashi. Theek hai, thoda lo. Right? Is it not common to go through this experience that Tamali encourages you to eat more because tomorrow is Ekadashi? Right? There you are. That's what we are. That's our level of consciousness. Right? So anyway, this is in lighter tone. But still the fact remains that here, Bhagavatam is giving us both sides of the coin. It is discouraging under-eating and discouraging overeating also. In fact, under-eating may be still permissible, but overeating definitely is discouraged. Somebody as astute as Saraswati Thakur openly criticized fat disciples. You know. Of course, in love, not in hate, but it indicated to him that somebody is fat while living in the matha. You know, how is he becoming so fat if he's living in the matha? That is, either he's not performing any austerities properly, or he's indulging more than necessary, or whatever. So, obesity is criticized by our acharyas strongly, right? Because yes, obesity can be genetic, it's true. You can have fat parents, you can phonetically. But oftentimes it is because of either overeating or lack of physical activity, a sedentary lifestyle, or maybe even both. Right? So, on the subject of food, I think we devotees need to, talking on more practical perspectives, we devotees definitely have something to think about food more deeply. Because the Bhagavatam is very, very specific, very clear. We may always take the shelter of Prabhupada's words, every slok for every folk types.
Prabhupada said, you can go back to, you can eat your way back to Godhead. But that's not for us. That's for people who, there's an advertisement for newcomers. Right? That's for people who are just coming in the JOSD course and, you know, into meat eating and all that restaurant dining and all that, you know, fanciful sense gratification eating. It's for them. Right? For people who are already committed to the path, obviously we cannot say that, because then how would that match up with the Bhagavatam standards? Then you keep on eating, it would obviously go into overeating, naturally. But Prabhupada created Govinda's restaurants primarily not for practicing devotees. It's very clear. We can always go once in a way and do that. But it was primarily meant to attract people to eat vegetarian food offered to Krishna in a sanctified environment. Right? So it was mainly meant for attracting, for recruiting more people. Either they come to a temple, get attracted, or to our philosophy, to our rathyatras, or to our restaurants. They must come to Krishna somehow or the other. That's the whole point. Right? And if they come to the restaurants, maybe they'll, you know, sneak into the temple also. Say, let me go and see what's there. So, we devotees definitely have to be more considerate as far as prasadam is concerned, because what is said here is, I think I find it interesting, because generally we say, eat only enough food to keep body and soul together. Right? Now, if you were to say that, or even hear that, how does it appear very repulsive or very attractive? I mean, I get repulsed by that. It only to keep body and soul together, that means, just enough types, so that just to keep that connection between body and soul, that sounds like a very high standard. That immediately reminds me of Raghunath Das Goswami and, you know, cannot, right? But here is a more, the word ahar artham, the word is very important. The word ahar artham in this verse is, indicates eating only to keep oneself fit for spiritual advancement. That fit thing probably fits into my brains also better. That you're supposed to keep yourself fit. Otherwise the standard of keeping only body and soul together is possible, but it is more for people like the advanced Goswamis. Right? But at our level of Madhyamadhikari, Kanishtadhikari, whatever platform we may be, right? It's basically to keep ourselves fit. Now, food, since it has such a huge impact on consciousness, it is not enough to always think that anything is offered to Krishna is good for spiritual advancement. That's, we must understand that. Anything offered to Krishna is good for my spiritual advancement may not be the right approach for a practicing sadhaka. Even in that realm, he will have to practice the power of discrimination. Right? Because rich prasadam, rich food, rich prasadam obviously is detrimental to the body and the mind. That's a fact. When it is loaded with very high calories, very high sugar, as we all know, sugar is stimulating. Right? All wines in the world are made out of sugar. There is no Kadava wines. It's all sugar based, made from grapes, right? Cherries and grapes is all sugar. The low class wines are made out of jaggery, is sugar, right? Because they have the power to stimulate. Sugar is a direct stimulant, right? So we can also eat a lot of sugar in the form of prasadam, and definitely get stimulated for the wrong things. And therefore, in the night, especially, we are asked to be careful to eat food which is, you know, more simplified version, right? The khichdi and, you know, like that, soup or some bread, this and that, like that. So eat basically something simple in the night, so that we are, our body remains. Why do we eat less in the night? Not just because we want to have a good bowel the next day. That may be a side benefit. But basically we want to get up early in the morning to chant our rounds. So again, it's very clear, eating less food in the night is primarily a means for, it's a fitness program, so that we can do our sadhana morning program nicely. So every law, every rule the material world creates, we can take that, but for purpose of, you know, supporting our primary activity, which is, as you said, the spiritual program. So our music life is our spiritual program. When people meet together, they ask, how is your bhajan? Right? Otherwise, the question is, how is your bhojan? So it is, the question is not how is your bhojan, but the question should be always, how is our bhajan? So yes, practicing discrimination, I think devotees are gradually in ISKCON becoming more aware of this fact. There's a program in the ILS in Mayapur, some of you heard this, where the strong seminar given by senior Vaishnavas on your prasadam is don't kill the devotees with your prasadam. Don't kill the devotees with your prasadam. That was the name of the seminar. Imagine killing devotees. You know, can this is a very violent word, right? Killing people, daggers, swords, missiles. You know, they can kill people, yeah. But imagine this seminar said you can kill Vaishnavas, but not with daggers and swords or with offensive words. You can kill them with your loving prasadam. Right? So it is a warning for all of us to understand that overindulgence, I speak for myself obviously, that we all definitely oftentimes we tend to tilt towards indulgence. Atiyahara. What is spoken here is in the Netra Vimsakam also. Atiyahara prayasascha. And one interesting word which is used here may not be for brahmacharis. Unnecessary collecting or warehousing of alms. Now survive the word warehousing. You know what is a warehouse, right? Warehouse is like a godown. It keeps, you know, tons and tons of things. So the word, this is maybe American language. We don't use it so much in India. It's an American translation. Maybe Ridhananda Goswami or somebody, right? Warehousing of alms. That means having your fridge stuffed. You know, some people have one fridge. Sometimes people have two fridges in the house. And big size. You know, huge, double doors, one up, one down, two on the sides. And you can keep on, and you open it, it's not like empty, it's all filled with, you know, something which lasts for a few months, something down for fruit section, then grains, everything is stuffed, right? So, yeah, that's what it is. We are, the grihastha asked to be a little more frugal and not start warehousing their houses with unnecessary food. But more importantly than the food, it is important to focus on the mind. Because this verse is also giving us a strong signal about mental hygiene. In as much as physical hygiene is important, internal and external cleanliness, equally if not more important is mental hygiene. So also creating a milieu in your mind, which again the same principle, keeping it favorable so that it can really contribute on the spiritual truths. So it means there has to be, when you go for panchakarma treatment, it's only about bodily detox, right? Vaman, basti, etc. Various things are done, snehan, svedan. It is basically for bodily detox. But a yogi, and we are all supposed to be yogis, bhakti yogis, right? We are supposed to meditate strongly about mental detox. So it is a huge subject, obviously. Mental detox is a huge subject, and all we do in Krishna consciousness primarily for that. But to make it simplified, what seems to affect the mind very commonly is infections of the mind. Body infections, mind infections. So they say the three C's are most common. You know, sea means a sea, an ocean. But there are three C's, a bigger ocean. C for complain, C for criticism, and C for comparison. These three things, if you were to introspect ourselves, we can see on a practical level that oftentimes our mind gets infected, polluted, putrefied, affected deeply when we are infected with this bug of comparison, criticism, and complaining. In fact, in one place, Prabhupada even writes, if you don't complain about anything in your life, you will go back to Godhead. Very surprising. My father was in a terminal state of cancer 10 years ago. And our dear friend and godbrother, Gaurinandan Prabhu, came to meet with him. He was in his, as you can say, his last scene of his life's drama. And but he was able to recognize people, talk to people. And devotees out of sympathy and love would come to see him, talk to him. Because he was friend of many people. He was friend with many people in the congregation. Especially the senior Vaishnavas knew him well. So they would come to see him. And so my father's name was Narendra Bhai. Narendra. He said, Narendra Bhai, so how are you? Any complaints in life? Any regrets? Any complaints? You have any to complain? Probably he was saying that he would complain about his children. I think he asked because of that. I don't know why he asked this, but he said, oh, my two sons, you know, they are the usual thing, you know, Gujarati families, you know, they didn't do this, they didn't do that. Right? I think most devotees' parents would have something to complain against their children, right? For all the bad conduct and offensive words they may have used in their neophyteness. But my father was very gracious. He was always gracious. And he said, Rohindan Prabhu, I have absolutely no complaints in my life. I have nothing in my life to complain about. I'm completely happy and satisfied. And Prabhu immediately said in response, said, then you'll go back to Godhead. I don't know where he went, but definitely he went somewhere closer to Krishna. So this is a very beautiful thing, to not complain, to not compare. When do we really compare? Okay, everything, let's say like this, comparison has a negative side and a positive side. Everything in this world is positive and negative, right? Nothing is always negative. So we can understand comparison is bad. Why? Why is comparison bad? Very simply because comparison often always leads to dissatisfaction. Rather than being grateful for what you have, what Krishna has given you, but God has given out of his bountiful, you know, merciful nature, right? When we compare, we can immediately start feeling unhappy caused by the infection of dissatisfaction. And everything which God has given you falls into a delete category. And what is not there becomes like, I don't have this. But I'm comparing somebody who has a better car than me, a better job than me, a better beauty than me, or better hair than me. Or whatever they have, more than me. Then I compare and I become dissatisfied. Right? But is comparison always bad? No. If we compare with people with a positive, so there is, like, you have criticism, you have criticism and you also have positive criticism, or we call it often as constructive criticism. So we cannot do with comparison because it's our nature, it's a human nature to compare. Because obviously you're sitting with people, you're going to see people and you're going to compare, right? It's natural to compare, it's not unnatural. But there is also something called as positive comparison. That means you compare with people who you have better than you, better qualities than you, better virtues than you, and try to get inspired by them. Right? So we can always compare with senior Vaishnavas who do better than us on various fronts in terms of surrender, in terms of their sadhana, the japa, the commitment, the sense control, you know, their overall performance, their overall lifestyle. And we compare with them. Because when you compare with for wrong reasons, we can get infected very badly. The strong reminder for that is Kaikai and the co-wives of Kritadyuti. Kritadyuti's wives, I mean the co-wives, she was a favorite wife of Chitakdu Maharaj. We know that, right? Because she bore a son, Harsashoka. But because the co-wives compared so strongly, that here is our co-wife who is receiving all the love and affection of the husband. And we are all bereft. They were pious, but they were not Vaishnavas, unfortunately. Because they were... Chitrakala Maharaj obviously did not marry low-class, materialistic, sense-gratifying ladies. He was a pious king and he married pious people, pious girls, pious ladies. Right? So they were pious people, yet if they were Vaishnavas, they would have been happy that our co-wife is getting all the husband's love. But they were not Vaishnavas. And they were compared severely, and what a disaster comparison can lead to. She is getting all the love, all the attention, all the praise, all the recognition. If we are getting nothing of that, let us eliminate the cause of this. Let us kill the child. There's a very strong story, very powerful story to remind us how comparison, we don't know when it turns into envy. When you compare for the wrong cause, when it turns into envy and make your mind, envy, as you know, is the worst infection of the mind. Nothing is worse than all the demons are demons because they have a huge proportion of envy in their consciousness. And we are what we are because we are trying to minimize that. We are devotees because we are trying to work on our envy, and the demons are people who have got a lot of envy. Right? So a pious lady, Chitrakala Maharaj's wives, from being pious, God-loving, God-fearing people, can become a killer, a murderer, because of envy. So strong reminder how comparison can be very detrimental. You have to overcome that. And criticism, right? Speaking very shortly about each of them. Criticism. Now, we don't have to remind us, we have enough reasons to be reminded again and again about the power of criticism. Mm-hmm. That's something which we, in fact, Radhanand Maharaj says that, what is the worst thing you can do in life? Important question. We should know what is the best thing to do in life, what is the worst thing. What is the best thing you can do in your life? Yeah. Could be various answers and all could be right. To serve Krishna, to serve the Vaishnavas, to chant the holy names. Fantastic activities. Probably serving Vaishnavas may come out to be the best activity in creation because Krishna loves that. Right? So yes, serving Vaishnavas is probably held in Krishna's evaluation system as the best activity a soul can perform. And then Maharaj asks this very powerful question in this particular lecture. He says that, what is the supermost worst thing you can do in your life? And imagine when he said that, my ears cocked up. I should hear this. Because I definitely don't want to do what he's going to say now. I said, the supermost worst thing you can do in your life is to criticize Vaishnavas. And he was talking this in relation to Shobhari Muni. Shobhari Muni, after having generated tons and tons and tons and multiple tons of piety because of sense control, knowledge, austerities in the Jamuna, lost all that in no time because of offense to Garuda. You offended a great Vaishnava like Garudji, right? And here is a person who was on the heights of such immense pious punya karma, heaps of that. And then he turned into a sense gratifier like anything. He lost Krishna's grace. From being a completely self-controlled sage, all that it required to disturb his consciousness was two fish coming together. What to talk of a great yogi, even people like most of us, ordinary people in the world, would not get disturbed by that. Right? When pigeons or, birds have what they do, it doesn't seem to, create ripples of agitation. It's just work as usual for them, and we don't even think about it twice and just go with our work. But here is a powerful sage is so disturbed with just two fish coming together. And he had to marry not one or two, but 50 daughters of Mandhata Maharaj, and the whole story is there. All coming because of criticism. Again, a strong reminder to our consciousness that we can undo all the good we are doing to ourselves if we are not periodically reminding ourselves about criticizing anyone, especially children of God, Krishna loves devotees. Strong reminder for that. But there could be constructive criticism. So what's that? What is constructive criticism? When two people love each other and one corrects the other, it becomes constructive criticism. What parents do to their children is called as constructive. What a loving husband and wife do to each other, they said, hey, how did you speak that? How did you do that? You know, when two people in love and agreement and intimacy, when they seem to criticize each other, then it is constructive. What a disciple does to the spiritual master, out of chastisement or you know whatever else he does, not proper. Or a senior trustworthy Vaishnava does to his junior assistants, when there is a bond, a contract of love and trust, then what appears the criticism outside actually is constructive. Because it is being done with the intent. Criticism is bad, but what makes constructive is their intent. The intent is founded on love, then if somebody is correct somebody else, criticize somebody else, it is constructive criticism. So, of course, we must be very sure that there is a trustworthy relationship existing before we do that. Because we could probably make mistakes on that, right? So, these three C's, comparison, criticism and complain. Complain is another thing. Complain. So many things complain. And if we can get, and how do we really get rid of this? Three, when we think about it, it's possible that when we bring into our hearts this quality of offering respect. I was thinking about it, that when you bring to our hearts this quality of offering respect to everyone, you probably will not complain to people so much, probably will be less critical, and will be less comparison. Right? So, amanyana mana dena is not just a... There is so much to it than what appears on the surface. Right? It's not about the external just offering respects and, you know, pranam, Hare Krishna Prabhu. There is much more to this concise sutra-like verse of Mahaprabhu Chaitanya when he says, amanina mana dena. Because you will never criticize somebody whom you respect. We start criticizing people when our respect quotient goes down. We can think about this, right? If I have a strong respect for somebody, right? If he tells me something, I don't criticize him. The moment my respect for him starts going down, then I start criticizing him. Correct? That's the way it is. So therefore, amanana mana dena is probably antidote to many evils which the consciousness can get infected with. It's a like we have broad spectrum antibiotics. You can use it for many infections. Similarly, truly imbibing this quality of offering genuine respect to others and not expecting respect from them could be potentially for all of us who practice this sincerity, a broad spectrum antidote towards many things which can impinge on mental hygiene. It's a very beautiful thing to follow. Right? And of course we see this in Prabhupada's life all the time, that how Prabhupada was on the physical level, on the mental level, his bodily airs. Prabhupada was a perfect acharya. It's a complete acharya. Of course every acharya is complete, but you know, how he had his Ayurvedic knowledge. He was an Ayurvedic teacher in Jhansi. So he knew Ayurvedic treatment, he knew water treatment, he knew the value of massage. So Prabhupada is an example which we all can take very deeply, not only spiritually, but in every way. Prabhupada, I don't think ever overate in his life, right? Though he had his tendency for sweets, I believe because he was Bengali. So he liked the sweets, so even every day Prabhupada would have a little bit of sandesh every day. I'm told. Thoda sa. In the end, most people like to have a little sweet So there was a little bit of sandesh in the end. But Prabhupada is an example how he actually kept, even at the level of 70, 80 years, a perfect acharya who taught everything in his life in a perfect way. He was completely regulated. The word used here is yuktam. Yuktam. Yuktam tat pranadharanam. Right? Prabhupada was perfectly regulated. So much to learn from Prabhupada. The time he got up, the time he slept, the time he worked, the time he had his lunch, the time he had his bath. He was so much regulated. And that probably explains why Prabhupada could go on till 82 with such an impossible schedule. With a stressful life, all his married life, his business life was very stressful. He was a traveler even then. He was based in Bengal, but he was always traveling for business purposes. Coming all the way to Bombay also for business, right? He was traveling all over the country for business. So Prabhupada, all his life was always a traveler. And traveler is a very huge force which degenerates the body by increasing the vata component. So Prabhupada was always a traveler, but he could maintain his life till 82 in spite of huge stresses, impossible stresses of life, which we cannot even imagine what stresses he went through. And yet he survived till 82. Of course, Krishna, he was in Krishna's control. But on the external perspective, Prabhupada's life is also so much to learn that when immediately he was told by the physician in New York that you should start walking. Should immediately see this as Krishna's arrangement, that here is Krishna speaking through this person, and he began to walk. Right? That means, of course, for him, nobody would have told him to go to a gymnasium and jump and run and have weights. But the fact is, he was told to perform some exercise. Right? So Prabhupada's regulated life, his eating of food in measured quantities, performance of exercise, thinking of his body, mind never infected by, you know, false comparisons, never criticized. He was very critical. Prabhupada, in fact, very critical person, but always, everything Prabhupada was always constructive. When he criticized the demonic people, criticized the false godmen, criticized the scientists, with never hate, never malice, nothing was there. He was such a pure-hearted soul. He did it just for us, that we don't get trapped into these false theories of false godmen and false scientists. He was saying life from some chemicals and there's no life on the moon, etc., etc. All the time he had to teach us, because we were so naive, all devotees so naive. Oh, yeah, well, it could be, we don't know what modern science is saying. You know? It was very clear. So therefore, all of us who are scientific-minded people sitting in this room, we were convinced because Prabhupada was very crystal clear. They didn't go to the moon. That's it. Very clear. He does not say, yeah, where may this go to the moon? Yeah, well, we don't know. He said, this is Arizona. Desert of Arizona. Right? So in this way, Prabhupada criticized. He said, he would use strong words for them. But it was never, ever, ever out of malice. Prabhupada was an ocean of compassion, right? And out of his compassion, he would criticize them to rectify their mistake and also to protect all of us, right? So, if we simply examine Prabhupada's life very closely, we will see a perfect example of somebody who followed this regimen. And that how he was perfectly controlling his senses, his mind was always pure, and his life affairs were kept to its best, because he could always remain fit to contemplate on the spiritual truth of life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Kangal ji, Hari Bol.